The seventh day of our retreat together. We've likely reached a sufficient understanding of the path of Dhamma practice. And so we come to investigate, or take a look at what is this mind, this jitta, what's that element of knowing? It's a knowing element that knows sense phenomena, and that is what we call the jitta, or the mind. So having known a sense impression, then the mind chases after those sense impressions. This is when the mind lacks wisdom. So when the mind lacks mindfulness, lacks wisdom, it chases after moods and sense impressions, and we lack knowing. If there is an appealing mood and the mind chases after that with attraction or liking, if there's a mood that's not pleasurable or painful, then the mind has aversion to it. And so the mind lacks intelligence. And based on these sense phenomena, the mind proliferates. And so it's been like this ever since we were little, ever since birth, since being a child. We receive a sense impression, and the mind receives a great many sense impressions from the world. Having been born into the world, there are these worldly dhammas that we receive all the time, continuously. There's gain, there's praise, there's fame, there's pleasure. These are worldly dhammas that the mind wants, that it likes, because they're pleasurable. But then each of those pleasurable worldly dhammas has its opposite. So there's loss, there's criticism, there's disrepute, there's pain. So they come as pairs like this. So sometimes there's praise, sometimes there's criticism, sometimes there's gain, sometimes there's loss. And problems arise based on this. It's like we use a car for 10 or 20 years, and one day the car breaks down or has an accident, and we didn't think that this would happen, but it does, and then we suffer about it. So these are the worldly dhammas, the side that we like, which are four, the side that we dislike, which are also four, and so there's eight total. And these eight worldly dhammas, they contact the mind all the time, constantly. And so if the mind lacks strength and energy, the mind chases after, runs after the pleasurable ones and runs away from the painful ones. And it just goes on and on like this throughout one's whole life until death, until the physical body breaks down and degrades. And then we take a look within a single day, the mind is born and dies, born and dies, born and dies. With these worldly dhammas, it's a birth and death that occurs within the mind each day, many times. And so the Buddha taught us to train our minds. The well-trained mind brings happiness. And so the mind that's not trained, it lacks intelligence, and it can't give rise to intelligence on its own. It needs to be trained. Just like any kind of worldly skill or field of knowledge, one needs to train and practice in it. We study, we train to get the skill or get the knowledge. Like the monastic study for the first level monastic exam, second level, third level monastic exams, the Pali exams, to give rise to knowledge, to give rise to intelligence. And so in the same way, we train in our meditation object. So we train like this to give rise to knowledge, to give rise to intelligence, to give rise to wisdom. So we train the mind. And what do we train the mind with? Well, we have these eight worldly dhammas, and the Buddha taught the Noble Eightfold Path. So it's a pair like this. So in the Noble Eightfold Path, we have the aspects related to virtue. There's right speech, right action, right livelihood. And so we engage in behavior that doesn't harm ourselves or others. In terms of right livelihood, we engage in a livelihood, a way of supporting ourselves that doesn't deceive others. We don't deceive for the sake of getting wealth for ourselves. We see that that type of behavior has drawback and danger for ourselves and for our life. So we don't engage in wrong livelihood. But the Buddha taught to do or engage in livelihood in the right way. And it's not deceptive. And similarly with speech, we have speech that's not false, it's not harsh, it's not divisive, it's not pointless or idle. And in terms of action, we have action that's correct, that doesn't harm ourselves or others, and a livelihood that's not deceptive. So in the beginning, these are aspects of virtue, of sila. And we see that if we don't have sila as our foundation, then we have heat and agitation. But with sila as a foundation, we don't have that heat, and we can cultivate mindfulness and samadhi well. And without right speech, right action, right livelihood, the mind's agitated and hot, has demerit. For instance, getting wealth through an incorrect livelihood and deceiving others, or selling in a deceptive way or lying. And there's a lot of this going on in the world. And this kind of action gives result, and the result is suffering. One can end up in jail, incarcerated, or one can lose one's wealth because it was obtained wrongly. And then it's difficult to cultivate mindfulness and samadhi. This is all about virtue. And when we come to the aspect of samadhi in the Noble Eightfold Path, we have right effort, so having perseverance, effort, energy. Then we have right samadhi, the correct, firm establishment of the mind. Then we have right mindfulness, or right recollection. We have recollection throughout the day, whether we're sitting, standing, walking, or lying down. We have mindfulness. We have right recollection. We recollect the body as a heap of natural elements, earth, air, fire, and water, that the body is something not beautiful. In doing this, the mind becomes peaceful. The mind is gathered and collected. And so we see that these different qualities, they all support each other to bring the mind to be firmly established. And it makes mindfulness, recollection, easier as well. We can have mindfulness with the body. And we start to understand. In the beginning, we don't have to be in a big rush about it. We don't have to want it to go so quickly. For instance, some Dhamma practitioners in the beginning, from the first day, they see the drawbacks of the agitated, chaotic mind, the drawbacks of chasing after moods and sense impressions. And they see that their mind is totally without refuge, without a home, without a place to rest, just like a homeless person, a person out on the streets. So this mindfulness arises that one has been without a home, without a refuge, but now one wants a home, wants a refuge. And sometimes one wants that, but one doesn't get it. One sees that one's been homeless for such a long time. One's been chasing after sense impressions for such a long time. And then just in a single day, one decides that one wants samadhi, and will one get that samadhi just in that first day? It's like if we have no money whatsoever, and then we want to have 100 million, whether it's 100 million baht, 100 million Singaporean dollars, 100 million euros, 100 million dollars, or whatever the currency is, Will one be able to go from no money at all to 100 million in a single day? It's not possible. One needs to work. Similarly, one needs to train the mind, to have intelligence, to cultivate parami, to bring about the state of having a refuge. Because this practice of having mindfulness, recollecting the body, it's not easy, but you should have great confidence in it, that this method is correct, this method of mindfulness, of recollection, it is the correct path. It's the way to bring the mind to wisdom, to bring about peace and wisdom in the mind. So you can have the utmost confidence in this, may you be confident in it, so you can strive and practice, and you don't have to doubt it. But sometimes some people, they keep doubting without ceasing, doubting constantly. But like this, one can still progress, one can still practice. I was listening to the Dhamma of Lumpu Cha, and Lumpu Cha was giving a teaching that gave rise to great rapture in my mind, because I had a great many doubts and I wanted results very quickly as well. So Lumpu Cha gave the teaching that some practitioners have a lot of doubt, but if they keep practicing without giving up, then they can make it as well. And I got a great deal of strength and energy hearing particularly this last sentence, that they can make it as well. That even with a lot of doubt, one can progress, one can make it as well. If I heard that having a lot of doubt made it so that one couldn't make it, I would feel very disheartened. But hearing that one with a lot of doubt, they can make it as well, I got great strength of heart. So we see that this strength of heart, motivation, energy of heart, it's very important. Because a lot of doubt can weaken our samadhi, make our mind agitated. So we practice to put down the doubts, to just put them to the side. And sometimes the mind just won't let go of it. The mind thinks like that. The mind tries to think of a way to progress quickly, to go quickly. Lumpu Cha taught already, have mindfulness with the body, mindfulness with the in and out breathing, have mindfulness to contemplate the body as a heap of earth, air, fire and water, as a something not beautiful, as a subha, to bring the mind to peace and collectedness. We can also recollect the 32 parts of the body as they're taught, the 10 asubha recollections. So this is all about the body. And we have mindfulness with sitting, standing, walking, lying down. We contemplate the body internally and externally. So we do it like this. We train and practice like this. So may you have confidence in this. May you practice to bring about firmly established mindfulness. And when you do this, then peace arises, samadhi arises. You contemplate, samadhi arises, rapture arises, the mind's peaceful and gathered. You can get the 5 different types of rapture, as I explained previously, and the mind can feel a great deal of happiness. So we take a look at this body and see it as something not beautiful. When we see the body as something not beautiful, then the mind becomes beautiful, bright and radiant. So it's opposite like this. If we see the body as beautiful, then the mind is dark and lost. So it's lost in such a way that it's like we think we're going west, but we're actually going east. Or we think we're traveling east, but we're actually going west. So it's just not correct. Like we see in the 8 precepts, that we don't adorn the body, put on adornments or makeup and so on. And this is to help see the truth of the body, to see how it really is. Is it really beautiful in truth? The Buddha taught that it's not beautiful. So we practice to see the truth. We don't adorn the body or decorate it. We don't give it perfumes or scents. And this is to help see the truth of it. We don't dye the hair. We can see the hair becoming white. And this, we see this, and it helps us to not be heedless, but to be heedful, to see it as not beautiful. So this is an example. So we come to contemplate the body, not to be deluded in it. And in this way, samadhi, rapture, fullness and happiness arise. So we practice to make the mind gathered in samadhi, to make the mind firm, and to do this often, to cultivate mindfulness often. So we do this all the time. We do it continuously. We have effort. In the beginning, we need to force it or control it, to force oneself to sit meditation, walk meditation, to go on retreats. Or if we're sick, then we put up a fight. We keep making effort to patiently endure. We fight against the mara. And so we do this often in order to overcome these obstacles. And we make the mind peaceful and samadhi. And at this point, we don't need to control it, but the mind is firm. When the time comes, we sit meditation, we walk meditation, we don't miss out on it. Just like Venerable Ajahn Chah taught to the monks and novices, not to miss the morning chanting or the evening chanting. In doing this, one has the strength and energy to do the sitting and walking meditation. So this is important. And this is what Lungpu Cha taught. To practice evenly, to set our hearts on it, to have this firm intent. So we do this all the time. We practice like this constantly. Just like we see various members of the lay community giving alms during alms round every day, and they never miss a day. Even if it's raining or if there's thunder and lightning, they always show up to give alms. And this is something really worth rejoicing in. And also the laity in other countries making merit all the time. This is something that's quite miraculous and amazing. This quality of faith, belief, or firm conviction in the practice, and the practice of generosity, faith and conviction in the practice of virtue and meditation, and having effort like this, and seeing practitioners have this firm intent, this sincerity. Like even 60 or 70 years old, practicing to stay up all night, practicing meditation, to strive like this. So this is really worth rejoicing in, this firm intent to have effort and perseverance. So may you all have this effort and perseverance to practice evenly. May you do this all the time, in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, the mind can give rise to clear knowing. So we make merit, we do goodness, and we see that merit, we see that goodness. It's not that we have wealth and we just don't do anything with it, but we see the value of goodness. We see that all worldly wealth is temporary. But merit is in goodness is something that follows us into the next life. So therefore we do a lot of merit. We see that this merit is important. And the merit that's of great importance is this cultivation of mindfulness. We recollect the qualities of the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. We take that as our refuge. We contemplate and we learn about the body, that it's a heap of earth, air, fire, and water. And not only do we study and learn about it, but we do it as well. We recollect it. We recollect natural elements of earth, air, fire, and water. and we put it into practice. We cultivate mindfulness. We teach the mind. We keep a watch over the mind. Is the mind getting lost in moods and sense impressions? Is the mind getting lost in the world, lost in attraction or liking, lost in praise or gain or fame or pleasure, lost in aversion, lost in loss or disrepute or criticism or pain? So all these things, we contemplate them, that they're all normal, they're all natural. That when we live in the world, we need to meet with these eight worldly dhammas. So we need to prepare ourselves for this. We can also take a look at how do these eight worldly dhammas arise. They arise because of this body. And so the body eventually degrades and passes away. And there's also these eight worldly dhammas that can really torture the body. And we see that the body breaks down, gets sick, degrades. And so there's the eight worldly dhammas on the outer level, but there's also this very body right here that breaks down and degrades. And when the body breaks down and degrades like that, it can be a great deal of suffering. So we see that these aspects of pleasure and pain, the things we like, the things we don't like, they're right here. They're right here. And so firstly, we train the mind to have mindfulness. When the body's strong, we practice, we train, so that when the body does die, we can die with a happy mind. So may you be heedful, may you train and practice according to the teachings of the Buddha. And we make this effort even and continuous, effort to have mindfulness and samadhi to be firmly established. And sometimes a wisdom arises and it's like nothing we've ever dreamed of. We listen to the Dhamma, we see everything as convention, absolutely everything in the world. And in this way, liberation arises, vimutti arises, the mind is bright. And this is something that can arise for all practitioners. You see convention, see liberation, and Nibbana is close. And so this is an experience you've all likely had already. So Lumpu Cha would give teachings and I would listen, and I would feel that Nibbana was not far away at all. The mind was very bright and radiant, feeling that Nibbana was close. I felt I could see the path very clearly, just as if Lumpu Cha was taking all of us to Nibbana, leading us to Nibbana. But then days would pass by, the samadhi would degrade according to nature, which is natural and normal, because samadhi and wisdom, they arise, stay for a while, and cease. And it would come to the point where I didn't see the path clearly anymore, and doubts arose again. So it's like this. So in truth, when we see the path clearly like that, we should try to really remember it, to memorize it, so that whether we're actively seeing it or not, then we can remember, we can use our memory to bring it to mind or to remember what it was like. So we see the path, we feel peaceful and collected, we listen to the Dhamma, and in this way we can attain to and see the Dhamma. So we practice recollecting the Buddha Dhamma Sangha as our highest refuge, recollecting the natural elements of earth, air, fire, and water. And we have effort to cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness. The effort to make the mind firm and well established, to cultivate mindfulness of the body, feeling tone, mind, and dhammas, to see all sense phenomena as they arise. And whatever the mind's proliferating about, we watch it, We practice not to cling to it. We see that whatever arises in the mind, whether it's wholesome or unwholesome, they're all dhammas. They all arise and cease. None of it is a me, a mine, or a self. So we learn about this. The mind comes to an understanding of the path, and we see the path clearly. So this is the Dhamma, seeing the Dhamma clearly. So seeing the Dhamma, it's not something difficult. It's not beyond any of your ability if you apply yourself and set your heart on it. In this way, you can bring about the destruction of ignorance. And firstly, we destroy the clinging to everything as self. The clinging to everything as me, mine, you and yours. And we take a look, firstly we train and investigate, is this truly mine? Is it truly me, or truly self? Is this earth, air, fire and water, are they really mine? Are they really self? Are the thoughts and images, the various things that the mind comes up with and proliferates about, are all these mental arising self? Is liking and disliking self, pleasure and pain self? So we just don't pick up any of it. And this way wisdom arises. So it starts with, we have samadhi that's firmly established. Wisdom arises. And this is right view. And this right view, it's knowing suffering, its origin, its cessation, and the path to its cessation. This is walking the Noble Eightfold Path, having virtue, collectedness, and wisdom. So this is right view. This is knowing stress, knowing suffering. And if there's a lack of mindfulness and wisdom, then the strength of the path of the Magga is weak, and so we cling to the four elements as self. And so this clinging arises in the mind, clinging as me and mine. This is ignorance proliferating in the mind, ignorance proliferating, giving rise to sankharas, conditioned formations in the mind. And whether it's wholesome or unwholesome, we take it as self. It's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, it's taken as self. Any of the five hindrances or mental arisings that are meritorious or demeritorious, or liking or disliking, they're all taken as self. So this is ignorance. Just like when the eye sees a form, one sees that form and likes it or dislikes it. And why is this? It's because the mind is lacking clear knowing. And the mind, once it hears these teachings or knows about it, the mind doesn't want or like unwholesome states. Before, when the mind didn't know about wholesome and unwholesome states, the mind would think unwholesome things all the time for many lifetimes. It would just think demeritorious or unwholesome thoughts just as a natural occurrence, or thoughts of harm or ill will or attraction, aversion, greed. But then we learn about it and we don't like these thoughts anymore. Before, we used to like them a lot. We liked them for a long time as well. But we didn't know about them. We didn't know that they were unwholesome. But so now when that proliferation arises, we don't like it anymore. We want to do goodness. We want all our thoughts to be wholesome and meritorious. And so this can be an obstacle, because we want Nibbana, but these defilements, which are our old friends, they want to pull us in the other direction. The kilesas don't want us to go that way. The defilements say, oh, you want to go to Nibbana, you don't want to suffer anymore, is that right? And then this ignorance, craving, and attachment proliferate in the mind. And so we see that all these thoughts, these unwholesome thoughts, they're painful, they lead to hell. So we don't like thoughts like that. But this is not the correct attitude. Venerable Ajahn Chah taught, why do you want to cling to it like that? It's just like when you eat a fruit, you throw out the seeds, or whatever animal it is, like pork or pig meat or pork, whatever bones there are, you just throw them out. You don't eat them. So unwholesome thoughts arise sometimes. You just throw them out. Just don't act on them. Don't speak based on them. Don't act based on them, because this would be against virtue. But simply abandon them through right effort. This is practicing the path. This is having right intention. And this right intention is the intention to not have sensuality, to not have self-torturing, not to get lost in torturing oneself. This is the way to exit out of attraction and aversion, liking and disliking. We see that it's no good, and we have the intent to abandon that, and that's wisdom. So we practice sila, samadhi, panya, virtue, collectedness, wisdom, in order to achieve victory over the defilements in the mind, in order to escape from the eight worldly dhammas. And so we practice every day, and this increases our strength of mind, gets higher and higher. The mind gets more confident on the Dhamma path. So we cultivate samadhi. We can get upajara, neighborhood samadhi. The body and mind feel light and at ease. Whether it's day or night, we feel this ease and brightness. The mind can feel very relaxed and happy. In the beginning, it can feel quite torturous. We try to cultivate samadhi and wisdom. When the samadhi is low or not much, then the wisdom doesn't arise. And so what should we do in this case? Well, patiently endure, have kanti, have patience, have endurance, be well established in the five and eight or eight precepts, and patiently endure. Patiently endure a lot, patiently endure often. Because this patient endurance, it's the wealth of Dhamma practitioners. It's the best wealth. And we realize the end of suffering through patient endurance and effort. So in the beginning, we patiently endure, and we have effort as well. And this leads to the end of suffering. Sometimes there's samadhi. Sometimes there's mindfulness. Sometimes there's wisdom. And sometimes there's no samadhi, no mindfulness, and no wisdom. But what we do is we patiently endure and we keep making effort. We patiently endure and we do the practice. So we make virtue well established. And in this way, samadhi increases bit by bit. And we reach the point where meditation becomes fun and enjoyable. We have mindfulness and we're not bored of it or weary of it. We listen to Dhamma, we feel rapture and happiness. This is when the practice feels easy. But before it's easy, then we patiently endure and we just keep doing it. We don't give up. It's just like someone who has great wealth. In order to get that great wealth, they need to patiently endure and keep making effort to wake up early, to go to bed late, to do their work, to work a lot or work often, to be firmly established in that. And they need to use mindfulness and wisdom as well. And they need to have merit and parami as well. So all these qualities support each other. Dhamma practice is the same way. Firstly, we need patient endurance, and we keep training the mind. And in the end, wisdom is able to arise bit by bit. So we have virtue, we have mindfulness, and we train to put things down, to let go. So whatever we take as self, as me, it's mine, it's me, it's mine. We train the mind, oh, it's not me, it's not mine, it's not me, it's not mine. And then the mind gets deluded and lost. And we train the mind to give rise to knowing, to give rise to knowing, clear knowing, clear knowing. And we see that it's not self, that it's all not me or mine, you or yours, that all objects, everything in the world, it's all just these natural elements, and that it all arises and ceases. All beings are born and then die. So it all changes like this. So when the mind sees clearly like this, then the mind reaches a turning point. The mind changes. The number of births becomes fewer. So may you do this. May you practice without ceasing. Don't give up, but keep making effort. In the end, samadhi arises. These factors of applied mind or applied attention, sustained attention, rapture, happiness, one-pointedness arise. The mind is strong, has energy, and sees the Dhamma clearly. The mind becomes above the world, Lokuttara. This is something all of you are able to do. And this is what the Buddha taught, that we're all capable of this. So may you practice virtue, collectedness, and wisdom. Cultivate right view, right intention, all the factors of the Noble Eightfold Path, until virtue, collectedness, and wisdom gather together. The Noble Eightfold Path gathers together and overcomes the mind that's lost in the eight worldly winds. In this way, the mind goes above and beyond the world to Lokuttara. So may you have effort and perseverance in this. May you not give up. So today is the seventh day of our retreat together. May you all succeed in your practice, and may you all grow in blessings.